This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Now that his primary challenger has dropped out, Republican Senator Tom Tillis is free to move to the center for the general election. But wait, there may be a new challenger emerging as a result of redrawn congressional district maps. Meanwhile, what do the shakeups among Democratic presidential candidates mean for the primary race? The political junkie Ken Rudin is here. Hello, Ken.
Hello, Frank.
Lots to talk about in terms of the primaries, but let's look at North Carolina and those redrawn maps. All came as a surprise to us just a couple of months ago, and now they're really having an impact on this race, right?
Absolutely. I mean, for the longest time, the Democrats complained that Republicans have gerrymandered the districts and the state to allow dominance by the Republicans, even though the numbers would suggest that Democrats should have more seats. So currently, the Republicans hold 10 of the 13 seats, congressional seats in North Carolina. But the new map, the way it looks right now, it looks like two Republican incumbents may have nowhere to go, at least in 2020. And if that's the case, the Democrats could pick up those two seats.
Yeah, George Holding says he's not going to run again. He's an incumbent. Mark Walker is thinking about other options for himself as well. Talk about those two candidates, but also the possibility that there had been rumors that perhaps Walker might challenge Tillis in this upcoming Senate race. What do you hear?
Well, all the talk has long been about Senator Burr, Richard Burr, who's up for re-election in 2022 and has said he's not going to run again. But the fact that the courts have basically eliminated Mark Walker's district, who's a powerhouse in the West, he said he may run against another Republican, and that Republican could be Tom Tillis, the senator. Now, Tom Tillis lost his primary challenger earlier this week. Garland Tucker dropped out of the race. He said, well, look, you know, I'm not raising, even though I'm raising a lot of money, impeachment is drowning everything out and nobody's paying attention. Plus the fact that once the President Trump endorsed Tillis, even though Tillis is is suspect among some conservatives. Once Trump endorsed Tillis, Tucker said he had nowhere to go. He had no avenue to win. But Mark Walker, the congressman from the West, said he might run against Tillis. The filing deadline isn't until December 20th, so he has 2 weeks to decide. So he may do that. But his district, Walker's district, has been eliminated, basically has become much more Democratic. And George Holding, who's more in the East, now, remember 2 years ago, or maybe it was 4 years ago, when his district was redistricted, he ran against Renee Elmers and beat her. But it looks like he has no place to go in 2020, and he's retiring.
So these House races will be interesting to watch. Let's talk more about Tillis now. If he doesn't face a more conservative primary challenger, this allows him to run toward the middle right now, which is kind of where you need to be if you want to win in North Carolina. So that gives him a great advantage in the general election, would you say?
Well, yes and no. The thing is that there's been questions about Tillis' credibility from the beginning. He was independent until Tucker announced a candidate, until a challenge, and then he became much more conservative, latching on to Trump. If he loosens his ties with Trump, and of course Trump would never allow that because of the power of the tweets, if he loosens his ties with Trump, I think people will just see that as disingenuous. So even though he did lose a challenger coming from the right, Senator Tillis did, it's still, if he wants to move to the center, you know, Richard Nixon always said run to the right in the primary, but run to the center in the general election. I think people will just find it disingenuous, given the fact that he has attached himself so closely to the president right now.
Interesting character, too, in a sense, politically. It reminds me a lot of Pat McCrory, who ran initially, when he runs for statewide office, as a centrist, says, I'm a level-headed guy, I'm a centrist, and then gets pushed immediately all the way to the right by the legislature. Fascinating how he ends up holding the water, carrying the water for the bathroom bill, which he opposed, and in internal memos tell Berger and the House and more, don't do this. And then he's the one who ends up doing the defense. So it's kind of fascinating how he gets shoved to the right and then pushed out of office
in
his next.
Very good point, because I forgot about the legislature. Not only has the legislature moved the Republican Party far to the right, but so has Donald Trump. And basically, if you don't join that train, you don't get on that train, you're going to be left behind either by disaffected Republicans sitting home or a primary challenge.
So let's talk about the general election again for Tillis. Stay with it for a minute. He faces either Cal Cunningham or Erica Smith in the general election. What can we expect from them, and how might this turn out?
Well, Erica Smith is an African-American state senator who is running in the in the March 3rd primary, but Cal Cunningham, the Army vet, the former state senator who's run for the Senate before, has been endorsed by the DS Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee in Washington. He is the establishment choice. He seems to be a strong campaigner, given the fact that this is a very, for all the talk about all the Republicans moving far to the right, it seems to be a pretty purple state. Trump only won the state by 4 percentage points in 2016. Tom Tillis beat Kay Hagan by not that much last time, 6 years ago. So I mean, he has a shot, and for that's the tightrope that Tillis has been walking on. If he moves so far to the right because of a primary challenge, he alienates the centrists who could go to the Democratic Party. And boy, this is going to be a tough a race that everybody's going to be watching in 2020.
The other race they're going to be watching is the presidential race. And that one just got more interesting with the announcement that Kamala Harris is dropping out. Give us your take on her rise and fall.
Well, the rise is clear. I mean, when she announced her candidacy in January back in Oakland, I think there were 22,000 people who showed up. She was very effective in the first debate, which she took on Joe Biden on his backing of segregation of senators and his opposition to school busing in the 1970s. But she basically hemorrhaged a lot of money. She spent a fortune on staffs that she had to let go because she overspent. Her sister, Maya Harris, was running the campaign, and basically there was a lot of questions that they didn't know which direction to go. But I think most important for the talk about what the effects is that she thought there would be an avenue, a line to African-American voters, and at least as of now, with 2 months to go before Iowa, Joe Biden still has the black voters' loyalty, or at least there so far. And if she was not going to make headway among African-American voters, it would make no sense for her to stay in the race, even though she had already qualified for the December debate.
Well, let's talk about that, the vote and the way things are going and what the polls are showing. Biden is still in the lead. Sanders a very strong second in most of the polling. Bloomberg is now in the race. Buttigieg is gaining ground. Warren is losing ground. Are the Democrats going to pick another white man?
Well, I guarantee there will be a woman or a person of color on the ticket, either on the top of the ticket or the second place. But look, I mean, there are a lot of Democrats who say, well, Iowa and New Hampshire is so white, and that's why this is happening. That's why we're now down to basically white candidate choices of Biden and Buttigieg and Sanders and Klobuchar and Warren aren't white men, but they are white. But basically, look, I don't think it's fair to blame Iowa for that, because I think, look at what Barack Obama did in 2008 when he beat Hillary Clinton in Iowa. It's the way the Democrats have made the rules that if you don't have all these donors and all this percentage point, the support in the polls early in the process, you lose. And so, I mean, Kamala Harris did drop out of the race, but so did 15 other white candidates, Steve Bullock and Beto O'Rourke and Bill de Blasio, Kirsten Gillibrand. White candidates are dropping out too. So a lot of people are making the point that the Democrats may be left with just white candidates, but there's a reason for it.
Well, let me ask you a little bit more about that, because you talk about the rules and the way the Democrats have kind of jiggered the system. They got dinged for that in the way they supported Hillary over Bernie Sanders in 2016, a huge mistake, and probably lost the election because of it. That is certainly the perception of younger voters and voters who didn't show up, people who may not have voted in 2016 out of a sense that the party held its finger on its thumb on the scales. If there's that sense, the only hope the Democrats have is to turn out more voters than they did last time. And if they keep them home by doing it all over again, I mean, what's the outcome?
Well, look, it's true that maybe many young voters who backed Bernie Sanders did not turn out, but Hillary Clinton didn't turn out in Wisconsin. She never showed up. So, I mean, there are a lot of reasons why they lost. But if the Democrats are gonna be upset about the fact that the DNC's thumbs were on the scale, which I really question. I think they bent over backwards to make it so fair that you had 7,000 candidates running. But the fact is, if they don't realize after what's happened since the 2016 election why every vote matters so much, especially in those close states like Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, states like that, and Florida, then they don't deserve to win if they don't have a reason, an impetus to get out and vote in 2020.
Let's talk about the impeachment for just a moment. What is notable in this next round? The House obviously moving very quickly toward articles of impeachment, possibly before the holidays, and then, of course, into the Senate. So,
We basically know what's going to happen. It's preordained. It seems like the House will definitely definitely vote to impeach the president, which would be the third time in history. Andrew Johnson, Bill Clinton, and now Trump. Nixon resigned before the House voted to impeach, but he'll be cleared in the Senate. But I think basically that, I don't think that's the point. I think Nancy Pelosi, who has been the most cautious of all the Democrats fighting against impeachment for so long because the country wasn't behind it, she's looked at what she sees as the evidence, and she feels that whether it hurts the party, the Democratic Party, or not in 2020, that's where Congress has got to go. And for somebody who had been skeptical for so long about impeachment, she's now leading the cause, and you're going to see a vote to impeach by the end of the year.
Ken Rudin is the political junkie. Ken, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Frank.
You can check out Ken's work at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we talk to Nancy McFarland, who is mayor of Raleigh for the last 8 years. We'll have that conversation on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.